On today's episode, we got to talk about a business that is located in Pittston, and they have quite a scent to them. And I think that if you get into this episode, it will make sense. So let's go ahead and get started. You let me know what you think about this episode. I loved it. Great conversation, good laughs, and just a wholesome story. Let's go ahead and get started.
Welcome to Getting to Know the 570,
brought to you by Conversion Works Media,
a show that hosts special guests from in and around Northeast PA, sharing their stories, knowledge, and experiences in their work and personal lives.
Because let's face it,
doing business with locals feels good, but giving business to someone you know feels even better.
And now here's your host, Frank Sepko.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Getting to Know the 570. Today, we are here with Matt and Jen Machicki, and they are the owners of Designs by Olivia Gray, which is all-natural soy candles. They have a location in Pittston and on Kennedy Boulevard. It's the building where LBC is. They've been guests. A couple of businesses from right around there have been in here in the past. Great location. And we're going to learn all about their business, learn all about them. Matt and Jen, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So all natural soy candles, I think that pretty much explains it all. So I guess we could just go home then? Or? So there it is. That's your business.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Take care. I think right out of the gate, let's talk about, we don't have to dive into the past yet. We'll get into that. But right now, if I were to walk in your front doors, tell me a little bit about what am I seeing? What is, you know, what's the store all about? I mean, obviously we know candles, but tell me a little bit more from a product-centric standpoint. What do you guys have? What are you offering?
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of different products. Obviously, we have one of the largest selection of all-natural soy candles, but we also have a bath and body care line, an aromatherapy line. We carry different essential oils, bath and body products, as well as some other local fare from the area, such as honeys, coffees, and teas. But one of the things that we're most proud of is we offer the area's first completely customizable candle bar and candle-making classes.
Candle bar. Talk to me about that.
It's fun without alcohol, but you could bring it if you want. So essentially what we do is we allow a customer to come in and create their own candle experience. From the vessel right down to the scent, they create it all. I have a couple ideas of the type of vessels a customer can choose in here. But once they pick that, we walk them through the candle making process, and then we work with them one-on-one to customize a scent. We have a collection over 70 different oils that they can blend and mix to create that one-of-a-kind, unique scent that they're looking for. Sometimes they even come in and be like, hey, I have a scent from my past that I'd like to recreate. Could we work on that? And I say, absolutely. We'll take time and we'll go through that and try to get exactly what they're looking for. It's a really fun, unique thing to do in our area, and we're the first to offer it.
How does that work? How do they actually get to make their, you know, you almost imagine that as they're working through trying to create a scent that they like, mm-hmm. right? You're always sort of maturing it. So like, how does that work when, like, if you're making something and then you don't like where you're going, is that just gets scrapped and then they start over again?
Kind of. We made the process seamless from, like you're back in chemistry, kind of a lab. We have different beakers and little glass. Oh my goodness, I forget what they're called now. But it's
test tubes.
Yes, yeah. That was it. That escaped me. Where they practice blending with those first before they make their actual candle. So that's where all the mistakes could be made. You know?
Oh, okay.
And then once they really lock down on the scent profiles that they're looking for, it is a slow process building that ratio. So they have time if they have like a honeysuckle scent or a balsam scent that they're working with, they have time to gradually add those oils together, stop, and test it before they continue. Only once they're done at the approved finished product do we go ahead and then make the candle.
That's really interesting because, you know, I imagine that some people have a preconceived idea of what it is that they like. So do they kind of give you a heads up like, hey, I'm into this, and then you make recommendations on what they should be compounding so that it then leads to their product?
They do. We have quite a few customers that come in like that, and they're kind of just hell sent on their certain scent that they like.
So if I, for instance, if I came in and I sat at the bar, I would tell you that I love the scent of the leather slash sort of tobacco, sort of the cigar room smell almost, not the smoky, but that vanilla, tobacco, leather. I don't know what they refer to that as. There's like a name for that sort of overall scent. But if I were to say, here's the smells that I like, this sort of nice, roomy, warm smell, then you would make recommendations of the different oils to use.
Yeah, we have a brief little questionnaire that they fill out in the beginning so I could get to know them and their scent profiles that they prefer. And from there, based on what they fill out, I can make recommendations. But I always tell them in this process, be bold. You already know what you love, but you don't know what you don't know. And you could essentially create a whole new scent that you never knew that you would love. So we usually start there with the scents that they do enjoy. And then I get them out of their comfort zone a little bit, if they want to be, and try going into different genres of scent, if you will, like branching out to different maybe florals or ozone scents or even more masculine or fruity scents. And quite surprisingly, many leave, you know, different from where they started, and they love that. They didn't even know that they could do that. So it's a really unique process to watch them get there.
How crazy do you get with your flavors? I mean, if I said I'm saying flavors, and I know why I said that, because I was just about to say, imagine if I came in and I said, you know, I just want a candle that smells like bacon.
We have it. Unbelievable.
We do.
That's where I was going with this. Like, well, that's why I said flavor, right? Because I was thinking like, I was trying to like think about what kind of smells do you like in a house, and you know, every time somebody makes bacon, you're like, you know, or coffee. You know, I'm imagining you have that.
Absolutely.
I think you should come in because I think I should. And bacon.
Yeah.
We'll call your candle
breakfast.
Yes.
Breakfast. That's a good one.
Just breakfast. The all American breakfast.
There you go. I love it.
That's funny. What's the do you have like a you know, a smell or a scent that somebody created that was just completely off the wall that sounded ridiculous but ended up really working well?
Just the other day, I think Matt was working with them and they combined something with the ocean and pumpkin.
They did. So we had I think it was a pumpkin souffle one that we had, and it was our high tide scent. And right in the beginning, she asked me what my opinion was on that, and I was like, I don't know about that one. But then sure enough, when she did it and they blended together, and it was actually a pretty decent scent.
All right, I get pumpkin. What was the other?
So our high tide scent, it's a one of our coastal scents, like a beach theme.
So like the fresh air sea salt.
Yes. You got your ozone, your musks, your ambers.
So she mixed
that
with pumpkin?
Yeah.
And if you had to close your eyes and explain, what did the smell make you think of? Because that's always the special part, right? Like, was it like fresh, fresh apple pie?
I would say a holiday,
or like fresh pumpkin pie on at the beach. Is that
holidays at the beach, maybe? Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
But it worked.
I mean, that's incredible.
It's surprising, and we've had people. I mean, besides the crazy combinations that people could come up with, which we welcome, right? Like I said, we want you to get out of your comfort zone. There have some that have created the most beautiful scents that they're on our list to us possibly releasing that as a scent part of our collection. So this is what's also amazing about the process. So
that's awesome. And do you, I'm assuming, do you get the name, like you name whatever scent you put out there? Is that kind of how that works, or does
Once we lock down a scent, then the fun part is coming up with a name for that. And there's some that we've had on the shelf for about 2 years because we couldn't agree on a name, or we didn't know what to name it.
Or I wasn't allowed to name it.
So it was just based on the scent profile at that point.
Yeah, because that's it's a fun part, and it's the part that people immediately connect to first, right? That name says it all. Before they even smell it, that name has to either draw their attention or it can make them walk right by. So you have to be careful what you choose to name them. So I take it really very seriously. But that's probably, besides making the candles and coming up with the scent, that's the next fun part, is naming it.
Yeah, it's so neat because, you know, I've been in, whenever you travel, you go to these little shops, and my wife and I have been to several places where they've just got the most outrageous scents in candles. Mm-hmm. One of the things I learned about a long time ago, and this is going to be the next question I ask you, was to be careful, though, on when you're buying candles, because a lot of them are lousy in regards to what they do when you burn them, right? So they send that black residue up, and then there's garbage from it. And I understand. I think soy candles are really clean burning and stuff, right? So I wanted to ask you about that, as to why there's a focus on the sort of all natural soy candle versus using other waxes or whatever, maybe.
Yeah, you're right. There's a ton of different waxes out there that you could use, and they could all be used for different reasons. Obviously, candles makers have preferences. Costs are one of them. Performance, coloring. When you're getting down to those details, the type of wax you use is important. But you are right. Soy, out of all the available options, it is regarded as one of the cleanest burning scents. It has other really great features, such as holding scent longer than some other waxes, or what they call a hot throw or a cold throw. Sometimes the candle doesn't even need to be burned to be smelled.
Is that kind of like the when they do the melts?
Well, that's a cold throw means, like, if you just, like this candle that we brought in, if you just open the lid without lighting it,
it'll just send the scent through the room.
The smell that you get off of that is what's called cold throw. But yeah, besides cleaner and the scent lasting longer, none of that soot, and soy is also more of a renewable resource than some of the other materials that wax could be made of.
By the way, that's delicious smelling.
Thank you.
Right?
I'm a big fan of that.
Almond macaroon. Am I pronouncing that right?
Mm-hmm.
Macaroon?
Yeah.
It's a very... it smells so good. It almost smells warm. Mm-hmm. It's like...
You're right on.
Yeah, it almost smells warm. Really nice product. I wouldn't... I don't know how to explain this, but like containment... it's not a packaging yet. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. It has this... Is this... I mean, you have other things there. Well, I guess people are mixing their own, but is this... The standard design of all your product?
Yes.
That's what our products come in.
It has a, what's the feeling I'm thinking?
Clean.
It's simple and clean.
It's
and
classic.
And there's a reason behind that.
It has like a Pier One feel to it. Does that make sense?
It does.
That's not insulting. No. I say that and somebody's like, Pier One.
We design, it's the whole package, right? So even our packaging, our labels, our lid, our vessels, they match the ingredients that we use to make our candles. Clean and simple. No funny business, no chemicals, nothing, no additional additives, dyes, or perfumes are added to our candles. So we keep them as clean and simple and natural as possible.
Different sizes. What do you guys have?
Yeah, so that size that you're holding right now is our the smallest size that we have. That's a 5-ounce candle, but we range up to 12-ounce and then double wick candles as well.
Oh, the big ones that sit in stands with it's a double wick?
A double wick, yep.
Okay, nice. And the burning time on these is, in comparison to the rest of the market, is how does that compare?
Soy lasts a lot longer than other candles. So a simple candle of 5-ounce without any of those extra additives, you can get about 50 hours.
Out of this candle? Mm-hmm. 50 hours? Wow. Do you do, what is it, every year? Every year my mom gives us something for New Year's.
Bayberry.
Oh, the Bayberry.
Do you guys do that?
So we don't have a straight bayberry just yet. That is one of our number one requested ones, I think, right around New Year's. But we do have a cypress and bayberry,
okay,
which is also super popular.
Yeah, it's I don't like that smell all year, but it was the...
That's why we mix ours with a little bit of cypress, so it keeps... You know, you could keep it during the winter time, and it doesn't have to be just something you burn once a year. But
is
it
cypress
blends
like
really well.
The pine.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah. That's a that would be a nice combo.
It's very. I personally like it than just regular bayberry, so that's why we kind of blend it that way. But it's a huge seller of ours. So.
You know, I guess that makes me think about the next question too. Is there like an abundance of particularly like seasonal candles that you see customers kind of go through? And I asked that question because it, when, from a rational standpoint, you would think, well, sure, there's your sort of fall scents, your winter scents, your summer scents, right? But I could tell you this, like if I go to my in-law's house, like year round, they have that, I don't know what the scent is, but it's like a country scent, okay. You know, like that country spice, almost like what are those little bags like potpourri,
like the potpourri?
But not the flowery potpourri. It's kind of got that like
the different spices, like the nutmegs and things like that.
Yeah, year round. I mean, it doesn't matter what time of year. All year their house smells like that. So, I imagine that some people just find a smell that they like, and it's like their brand almost.
We have those. Even though we do break up our collections by season, we keep every scent all year round because people like what they like. Some like to change with the holidays. Some change more seasonally. But some don't care if it's, you know, June. They want their pumpkin. So
can we leave this with the top off for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do that. That smells incredible. So... You have this bar where people can come in and they can make their own scents. Is this something that well, first, let me ask this. How long have you guys been at this location?
At this location, Pittston, we've been here since September.
September.
So just a few months.
Wonderful. And how's the new location going?
Great. Phenomenal.
We love
Great.
It.
Great. And where were you guys located before that?
Clark Summit.
Okay. So Pittston. Tell me about why you guys came to Pittston.
Well,
I was born and raised there. I grew up there my whole life. So it's a homecoming for me. But you know, Clark Summit was a really great place to start. They got a big shop, small movement up there, great small businesses up there as well. But we slowly started to outgrow our space, and I knew I wanted to take it to a more of the educational with the candle classes and the candle bar. And it's what I've always wanted to offer. Candles are my passion. I want to teach it, and I want to get other people involved in it too. So we knew we needed a bigger space, and I just happened to be downtown in Pittston one day, made a phone call, and there was a property available. Wasn't even potentially looking at that time, but once I saw it, I knew it was where I needed to be, and the rest was history. We just started slowly moving away from Clark Summit, getting the new place up and ready, and then it was time to close Clark Summit and open Pittston.
Yeah, it was a pretty quick turnaround time, too. We closed our Clark Summit store end of April of 23, right? And then we opened in September down here in Pittston.
Nice.
So that was a really quick turnaround time.
Yeah, and I mean, here's what's interesting. That's a hell of a... It's a hell of a distance between Clark Summit and Pittston. So I'm imagining that you were worried, we're probably going to lose some customers because we're not in their backyard anymore.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is the location you went to is very, very populous in the sense that you, that's funny. I said in the scent, right?
I thought you were being intentional.
Yeah, right?
Gotcha.
In the sense that this candle, the aroma is hitting me, and I just can't stop thinking about the word scent. The location you're in is very populous in regards to an audience that would genuinely appreciate this product.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what's happening in downtown Pittston. I think that, you know, starting with Main Street and then your landlords, Pat and Tino, have been doing an incredible job.
Yeah, they have.
They're just, and they're good guys. You know, like there's I've years ago I met them, and we were working on a project that was in their New Rose building, which is that one with the huge mural on it, right at the Tuxedo place was in there. I don't know who's in there now, but it just I got to meet them and talk to them years ago and got to know them, and I think that they're great guys. I think that their commitment to doing what they're doing downtown is excellent, and not a single one of their tenants that I've ever talked to has ever said anything negative about them. Everybody's very excited to be working with them. They go above and beyond to try to make sure that their tenants are happy. But more importantly, it's like this sort of plan to bring traffic to downtown Pittston and get the right people in there, to the companies like you guys who have products that, you know, kind of are in sync with the other companies that are there, you know, the salt bar, the juice bar, like all of these things that are in that building. It's really great to hear that that's taking place there. Since you moved, was there any challenge with rebuilding up a customer base? Talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that if there's anything that I love about one of the things that I love about this podcast is not only does it give us the opportunity to tell the story and learn about your business, but there's a lot of business owners who listen to this podcast, right? And so somebody might be in a situation where they've kind of hit their potential and in their location, and they're thinking about moving, but they're like, I don't know. I'm worried that I'm going to lose the business I have. Like, I might be taking two steps back. You know, talk to us a little bit about that and sort of what that looked like for you and how did that pan out once you got to Pittston?
Yeah, you're dead on. You're right. Deciding to move your business when you already have established clients and customers is really scary. But when we originally opened up the Clark Summit store, we opened in 2020. So I feel like that was already the scariest time for a business owner. And I always operated under the old saying, when it's the scariest to jump, that's exactly when you do it, right? I just knew, I felt it in my heart, and I knew what I was capable of and what my husband was capable of and the brand that we built, that it just felt right. So I was willing to take that risk. If we're being candid on this show, my husband was not so sure. And that was a very funny conversation to have, because he likes living in that safe zone where I like living in the risk zone. But it was challenging. I think once, I'll let you speak for yourself, but I think once you were on board and we fully committed, you were just able to see that the excitement that was being built around it, not just by us, but the city of Pittston. We had other customers that heard that we were coming to Pittston. So even before we opened our doors, we were already slowly building that customer base that couldn't wait to see us open. And because we're constantly traveling and doing shows in the area, we already kind of had a good mix of people outside of Clark Summit where they actually told us, you're closer to me now. So once all that shook out, like, we felt better, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I was, like she was saying a little bit before here, like, nervous, didn't even describe what I was. I was just almost on board of just saying flat out no. But she's laughing because she knows it's true. But that's not the case. Once I actually saw her, like, the vision designed and everything like that come to life, then I was slowly easing into it. And then the further we got here, and then I was just like, I was all on board. I was like, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you opened up in 2020, right? And then every business took a nosedive because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right.
And were you still allowed to be open as an essential business? Or I don't know what that would be considered at that point.
Our store opened for the first time right after they did the initial lift.
Oh, okay.
So that worked out. We were very scared, though, because there was all those talks that there was going to be another, you know, shutdown and everybody have to shut down again. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
So I guess we were lucky with that timing of it, but still living day to day, never knowing what tomorrow would bring. So,
yeah, it's a scary, it was a scary time for sure. Mm-hmm. But what's nice is that if anything, the good that came of any bit of it from a business standpoint was that it, in some sense, I believe it stimulated the local economy to do more business locally.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a lot more rallying around supporting our local small businesses. And I think people intentionally, rather than maybe ordering from online, sometimes would, and I'm not talking about everybody, but I'm definitely saying that there was an increase in people who were trying to go out of their way to do what they could for local businesses. And as a result, they started to learn a little bit more about the value behind doing that, right? It's, you're not, there's a face behind it. There's, you know, somebody who's running this business who comes in, opens it, and closes it. You know, these are real people. They are building a life off of their business, and you start to get a sense of that humanization, and you appreciate that. And I mean, I always say that's the point of this podcast, is that, you know, if you get to know somebody, you're not going to go shop somewhere else. I mean, convenience purposes wise, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. But in the sense that if you know somebody and you know who you're doing business with, you can blindly purchase their product, not worry about it being at a premium price, not worry about the convenience issues. Sometimes you're just like, nah, I'm going to give this business to them because that's who they are and I got to know them. And, you know, I think it, albeit that it's, I'll use the barber or the hairdresser as an example. You know, for me to think that, for instance, my barber is the only one who could cut my hair the way he does, well, that's just silly. There's 1,000 of them that I can go to try. And sometimes my barber's not available, so why wouldn't I just go try another barber? But my loyalty is to him because I got to know him, so I'll wait the day or two extra.
Right.
I'll be pissed about my hair, but I'll go to the barber then. And that's my point, is that once you get to know people, I feel like that's where you'll do business with them. So I think that's the good that came from the business aspect of things from that time, because I think more people got to experience the small business experience. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Moving though, I guess my point was, is that you came in at a very strange time when you opened. So to know that you then moved to Pittston, not as scary as maybe somebody who was around since, you know, 2017 and had this, you know, business that was so deep rooted at that point. Yeah. You know, there's this relative comfort, and hey, you outgrew yourself in that short amount of time. That would also give me an extreme amount of confidence. Right. I mean, that's fantastic. So congrats on that. Because, yeah. What so tell me, what do you attribute towards the early success that I mean, if in talking about that, right? You opened up in 2020, 2023, you're already moving.
Mm-hmm.
What do you attribute towards that success?
I think a lot of it had to do with one. I mean, any business, you have to have a great product, right? That's set aside because that's the standard for all. I'd have to say our personalities. Mm-hmm. We saw kind of just like what you were saying, that it opened people's eyes to smaller business. And I think there wasn't that need to be a perfect, crisp business. People kind of wanted to see the ins and the outs and the dailies, the mundane. And they wanted to learn about you as people. And I don't think I'm nearly as interesting, but I made tons of videos with Matt, and they blew up. People just loved getting to know about him. We did
it's music to my ears, by the way.
Yeah.
I hear making videos, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah. I mean, just silly videos.
It just goes to the
TikTok
show
came out, just like the family, what is it? The family things. I forget whatever the theme song is, but it was showing Matt packaging up orders and like dropping them off at the post office, or just us trying to do things how we made a mistake. I always give this example. We put this product out there and I had no idea I spelled tobacco wrong on it. And here I am, I spent all this money on labels, marketing, and everything. And somebody commented, they're like, what's Tobacco? I was like, oh my God.
Tobacco.
Well, we're human. We make mistakes too.
Just that in combination of getting to know us and us constantly traveling to get our product out in front of people. But like you said, they just knew the faces behind the business. Mm-hmm. And I think that loyalty just grew. And we're so appreciative of that. And then, of course, our products are really good. So that helps continue, too.
Well, certainly helps.
Yeah.
Is it just the two of you? Do you have other people working there?
It's just us.
Just the two of you. Mm-hmm. All right. That's cool. And I didn't ask what days, what are your hours?
So right now we are Tuesday, or not, I'm sorry, closed Mondays and Tuesdays. See, I'm human. Here's the human aspect.
Tobacco. No worries.
Tobacco, right.
I know what our keyword's going
to
be.
So we're closed Mondays and Tuesdays. We are Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 7, and 11 to 4 on Sunday.
Okay. And are the bar experience coming in, is that a walk-in thing? Is that a...
Yeah, you could do walk-in or make reservations. We ask that you make a reservation just in case we have, you know, quite a big turnout that comes out that day. We always take reservations over walk-ins, but you are more than welcome to walk in.
How many people can come in for that experience?
We could fit 8 at the bar. Any more than 8 come in, and then we have a table off on the side that we could...
So let's say I wanted to bring my whole team. We all come in. We'll just get a table. And then what would we do? Would we fill out?
It depends. Like if you wanted to do the bar doing everything custom, you don't have to do anything. You could just call us and let us know you have this many people. You want to do the bar experience and we'll make it work for you. We'll set up whatever. But if you want to make it more of a party experience, that's when we recommend doing a candle making class. So a class is always... a minimum of eight to book a private event. Maximum, I think we could fit up to 25.
I say 25 is our 30. Largest.
Yeah. And then you still make a candle. You still get to choose your own scent. We just lose the custom aspect of it. So you don't get to pick a different vessel or customize a scent because there's a lot of math involved in that and time that we spend. So having a group of 30 people, it's not really feasible. But what you lose, you gain in food and adult beverages and sure. stuff like that. So it's more of like a party scent setting, hanging out with your team or your crew. Still learning about candles, still getting to make your own. But it's just like a really fun
It's a good experience. Time. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. It's like a party.
And how has that side of the business been going for you?
Amazing.
Like, yes. better than we ever could have expected. Really. Yeah.
Well, that's great because that requires, you know, marketing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to have a retail outlet and then people walk in, buy a product, leave, you know. Mm-hmm. But to actually get those people to come in groups, bring their teams, bring their mm-hmm. their family, friends, and groups, yeah. like you got to create awareness around that. So that's right. Excellent.
It's hard building it up, but we already have people booking their events into 2024 now.
Wonderful.
So we already have almost to the end of March or April.
Yeah, I was going
to
say April, beginning of April. We have classes booked until right now.
Not that I'm putting you on blast for what you just said, but I need to point out that we're all in shock that it's 2024. So when
we've
you
been
said
in it a month
yeah. you go, we're booking out into 2024, well, right? So it's not a meh, got
what
you.
What I meant to say is like even it's these a,
I,
classes,
I'm having the same problem.
I'm over here still writing 23 on things.
But some of these 2024 classes were already booked like right around when we first opened. That's what I meant to say. Like November, end of October.
That's
They're
great.
Like, hey, can we fill up these dates for 2024? I was like, oh, I didn't even get that calendar out. Sure.
Again, wasn't
no, I just, you're so right,
I'm finding
though.
It humorous because it's like usually that January, February time where we're all like, yeah, 2023, whatever, you're writing stuff down.
It just meshes together.
It really does. And then you go, wait a minute, it's this year already? Oh, my God. Anyway, I just thought that was funny. Yeah, people are booking out until 2024. Well, thank God. Thank God. So that's really great, though. What do you like? So how do you guys promote that? Where are you seeing that you're able to drive business for your group stuff? Or are you just successful at sort of educating the people who come in?
I don't know if we're overly successful at but Facebook does a lot. We do.
I mean, we got quite a bit
of, out there.
Yeah, quite a bit of phone calls. Definitely off our website as well, because all this information is listed right there. We do get quite a few phone calls a week, I would say, just whether it's not even only just booking a class or anything like that, but just inquiring about it, the different details and things like that.
Okay.
And we list all our events on Facebook for people to follow, but we also have a really built up email distribution list now too. So very we good. Let people know that the different options and just word of mouth too. People like looking for something to do in the winter, not a whole lot going on. So mm-hmm. somebody sees something and is like, hey, do you want to give this a try? Or I heard about this or whatever the case is. So yeah, it's a little combination of everything right now. I like to think it's because we're really good at marketing, but maybe a little bit.
Well, no, I think you're doing, I mean, you're certainly saying all the right things in regards to where you should be pushing mm-hmm. stuff out. You know, you guys said you were making videos and all that. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're doing, right? The proof is in the pudding, as they mm-hmm. would say. So yeah. I think if you're seeing the results, then obviously something's working for you there, and that's great. I think, again, I always try to think about where our listeners are at with things that they can take away or learn, you know. And when we look at other businesses who are out there who are trying to get, you know, maybe they're in a similar, you know, type of situation where they're looking to host events or do things, like, how do they get those people to come in? And, you know, you're mentioning that you're active on creating awareness on social media. That's important. Yeah. Emails, I think, is incredible when it comes to that kind of stuff in particular, because I'm imagining, you're not just promoting, like, book your event, right? Are you hosting like scheduled events as well?
Yeah, we do private events is an option, but we like to do themed events as well. One of our most successful mm-hmm. ones was our Taylor Swift one that we had in December. But upcoming, we have things like a Valentine's Day one, so you and your sweetheart could come in and have that class experience. But we also have a Galentine's one where you and your girlfriends could come in, and we do it themed. We decorate it. And we try to come up with like different concepts to keep the class interesting. Like one of the things that we're working on for Valentine's Day, which we haven't released yet, so you 570 podcast listeners are the first to know, is we're really looking for you and your significant other to blend a scent together, right? Like it's all about Valentine's Day and love and stuff like that. So they don't have to, obviously, but it'd be interesting to see what she comes up with and then what he or she or vice versa, whatever it is, comes up with, and to see how that'll work together, because
that could be a really neat litmus test to see if those people should end up together.
Oh my goodness!
Right, like that could be like an inevitable dating, like blindly that one person goes to that yeah. table, the other person goes to that table, they pick, then you blend, and if the candle smells like shit, then you're not supposed to be
that
together.
Definitely makes for an interesting class. Idea.
We should do a speed dating candle making class.
That's amazing. Right. That's an amazing idea.
I'm 100% down for this.
You should do that because that would be hilarious. Do you pair well? There right? That's what you call it. The event
Everybody
will be called
finds their scent, sit down next to each other. If you smell good together, you could continue on in your journey. If not, you're out. Get out.
That smells terrible. You need to leave.
Next.
You heard it here.
That's funny. But no, there's something to that, right? I think that I think when you talk about like smells and smells, scents, you know, taste, environment, I think a lot. I mean, think about the two of you, right? I think about my wife. Like, if there was things into the extreme that I didn't like, if she was burning candles that I didn't like, I would be miserable, right? Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't want that. There's a lot of stuff like so. I think it kind of mm-hmm. in a fun way.
Find it out now.
Yeah, yeah. Thinking about moving in yeah. together? Come in for a candle class and find out if that should happen.
That's it. We'll get it on the books. I want to see everybody in the comments what date you
Hurry
want
up, write
available.
That down.
Do you... February 14th, do you pair well?
There you go. Next year. We already have ours booked. Man, that's a good...
That's funny. Well, I think so for Valentine's, it's the are you booked up already?
Or nope, do you there's still openings? Availability in some of the classes.
Nice. Yeah,
so they still have opportunities to book.
Do you have a price range for your events?
Yeah, so the classes are all the same price. They're $55 per person.
As of 2024, prices are...
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This podcast might go 3 years later and somebody's listening to it and you're at $70 and you're like, what the hell?
There you go. No, but it includes all the materials. We provide everything, all the instruction, again, light refreshments, beverages, stuff like that.
And so how long does an event last?
I'd say they're roughly about 2 hours or so.
Okay.
And they make in the classes, you make a candle and a wax melt.
Oh, nice.
So it's not just the candle.
And is it a candle this size?
No, it's bigger than that. Okay. It's our 12-ounce, so like our middle option.
Okay. And is this two people making one? Is it?
Everybody makes
so like this, like for Valentine's.
Yeah, they're still going to make their own. We're just seeing how they would blend together. That's all.
Yeah. No, that's nice. And so what other types of events do you have throughout the year?
So we do a lot of different, like the craft shows and fairs and festivals and things like that. We do typically, I would say, in a range probably about between 70 to 90 of these shows a year. We travel pretty much all over the state doing different events every weekend.
Even outside the state. What, but as far as our, did you mean like events in our store?
Well, it was a little bit of both, right? Because... Where do people, I mean, I'm sure that they can tune into your social and look and find out where you are, what you're doing.
Right, but right.
For conversation's sake, wondering what other things you do. So, and then what kind of events. So, yeah, if it's in store, what other kind of events do you host throughout the year? And then if you're out on the road and you're at a, do you go to like a Luzerne County Fair type of thing? I don't know. So that's what I'm kind of looking for.
But yeah, like he was mentioning, we travel some of the well-known shows around our area. The one in Scranton at the Courthouse Square, we're always there for their holiday market. That's a really great show. We travel down to Harrisburg every year for Memorial Day weekend, and we do their art festival. It's an amazing festival. They do such a good job. And we do kind of bigger shows like that, but also in store too. I'll add, we're looking at new concepts this year. So, again, some of the stuff hasn't been released yet, but we're working with Kristen Armstrong, who is with Peaches Green, and she does a lot of greenhouse and planting. So we're working on a build your own plant class as well in our store. So it's not always just candles too. We like to support other arts, bring them in. Because it's another great piece for your home. It pairs well with candles and stuff, too. So we always look to keep it fresh and get new ideas as well.
Is there typically an event wrapped around, like, every major holiday? Like Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, or fall maybe in general or something?
In the news store, I think there will be a lot more classes. Previously, we didn't always have those opportunities in Clark Summit because we were a lot smaller back then. But that is the plan for this year and moving forward. Things I would love to get in the works are just ideas on a page right now for certain holidays, things we won't release everything on this podcast. I feel like there's nothing left.
Okay. Oh.
But all right. Yes, we do have, I think, some great classes and events scheduled for the rest of next year and some into 2025 as well.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
All right. So here comes the inevitable question. Who is Olivia Gray? Right? I feel like, where is, right? You know, it's like, who is Olivia Gray? I asked you, we briefly mentioned this before recording, and, you know, I always limit, limit the conversation beforehand because I always like it to be raw on here. So you alluded to that this might be a little interesting that you've told the story 1,000 times, something like that. So anyway. Who's Olivia Gray? How did that work its way into your business name?
Okay. So as you can see, our name is not easy to pronounce. And on paper, it looks even worse. So when we first started the business, saying my name, Jennifer Machicki. Nobody was able to pronounce that correctly. So imagine having a business where nobody could even say the name. Like, that's hard. I don't think we would have been very successful. So I was like, I gotta come up with something better, right? So we came up with a fictitious name. Olivia is just a beautiful girl's name. We both love that name. And gray was my favorite color. So I wish it was a really fun, amazing story that I had, but it literally took all of 2 seconds to come up with this name. And
it stuck.
Olivia Gray was born. And it just sounds so much better than Jennifer Machicki. I mean, it's a great name to have as a person, but as a business, not so much.
So Olivia Gray is a figment of our imagination.
She's not. She...
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, see, that's why I said it's not really
like Kaiser Sose. You remember that movie? Something about I forget the name of the movie now. Kaiser Sose. It was the character that was the inevitable criminal that everybody was chasing after, but he didn't really exist.
Oh, I can't say I know that one.
Look it up later. You got to watch the movie. It's a fantastic movie. I don't remember the name of it offhand. It's going to bother me. But it's the character, main character's name is Kaiser Sose. There's a bunch of good actors in it, but it's funny because it's sort of that same position. It's like Olivia Gray is the name that sounds right for this.
Yeah.
And it just came to you just like that? Like it was like.
Literally just a matter.
It was probably about 10 seconds it took her to think of this.
I mean, are you an international criminal or something? Like, is there like. Is this like, if we went digging, do you have a passport with Olivia Gray?
No, but
depends. How far does this podcast reach?
Matt, do you know everything there is to know about Jen? Is her real name Olivia? Just makes her feel better to put this out?
I really just love the name, and it's close to what my maiden name was before, so it's not far off, and I feel like I got called it when I was younger anyway. So it just, I don't know, it fit, but I set myself up for... failure every time people are like, oh, I want to speak to Olivia. I was like, well, technically you're speaking to her. Or they'll just call me Olivia. And for years now, I've just let it go. So I really do feel like I'm Olivia. And I would equate it to Sasha Fierce versus Beyonce. They're the same people. We are one and the same. Olivia is my Sasha Fierce, I guess.
That's funny. But I agree it works.
It's beautiful.
It works, especially... in the way that you have your logo, you know, just in a very classy, simple, mm-hmm. clean edge type of way. It makes me feel it's well done. I just doing what we do for a living and looking at logos and design, I think that it's clear what you set out to accomplish. And it makes me feel like it's a higher end product. It has a distinct sort of feel of it being from a bigger city, a designer that was like sought after or something of that sort. And then, you know, you mm-hmm. couple that with the packaging. So I really like it, but I think that the story is neat in the sense that, you know, you were, yeah. I mean, as you were talking, I was like thinking, I'm like, well, they could have broke up the last name or something. And like, Chicky candles, you know.
But I know, but that doesn't give you like the message.
No.
I mean, just even before this, like we had to write our last name down phonetically. Could you imagine? And now looking at our logo, could you just picture that there? I just can't.
Chicky? No.
Oh
no! 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 Yeah. No, no, no. I immediately, if you were like Chicky candles, I'd be like, well, that's a bunch of bubble gum.
That's right.
You know, like,
doesn't but, send the same message.
Yeah. No. 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 This is very classy. And I think that it fits well. So it's very interesting. And also, I think that's a testament of your business acumen, because there are people who just can't get out of their own way with sometimes thinking about how the public responds to a brand, and instead they'll put their name out and it'll be the most, mm-hmm. to your point, like you said, hard to... enunciate, mm-hmm. right? It's not something you'll be like, what was the name of that place? Mm-hmm. So I think this is very easy. It's very soft. Olivia Gray just sounds like a soft name too. So yeah, it's I can say to you that that is not at all where I thought that that description was going to go, what your explanation was going to go.
I told you it was a boring story.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it was boring. I just thought, I thought there was going to be more dirt to it for sure. I thought there was going to be like, well, we had this partner and Olivia and she blew up in a car accident. It was like, I was just being extreme. It's Olivia Gray sounds like, to me, it does sound like a mystery character a little bit. Like, you know, kind of like something like you would imagine, like Stephen King would write a book and Olivia Gray was like the prime.
That does go together.
Yeah. It feels like a robust character.
She was killed in a mansion by Mr. Mustard with the candlestick.
You should really like think about something. I think this would be fun. This is a good little workshop space here.
Tangent.
We got
right up my alley.
I think this is great. I think we need to create a story for Olivia Gray. I think Olivia Gray needs a story, and one that nobody will ever be able to meet Olivia, but we need to tell a really cool story so that.
But at the same time, everyone's going to be Olivia.
Like, can't Olivia? Well, wait. Can't Olivia be? Can't Olivia be like your great great aunt, and then you found her secret candle recipes, and you know, whatever the words are, is that, would that be a recipe for a candle?
Yeah.
So you found her book in your grandma's house, and Olivia Gray was, and we just put this big story behind it, and then in your store you get one of them real old looking books and you put it in a clear cube.
There you go.
And be like, that's Olivia Gray. That's a secret recipe. That's it right there. And then everybody always thinks like, oh, wow.
I was going to say, but this reference is probably way off. Like, oh, book from like Hocus Pocus, one of those books.
That's funny.
It just comes off the shelf.
Yeah. It just flips open. Well, that's neat. I think that that's really cool that you came up with that name. And I think it's funny that people think that they want to ask for Olivia. That makes sense that they would ask for it. Sense. Yeah, it makes sense. That's why. Somebody says, why did you name your business Designs by Olivia Gray? Because it makes sense.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. It does make sense.
I like it.
There it is. Mic drop. I can't, though, because it's on a poster. It's attached. All right, so let's go back to before 2020. This is where we get to know you guys a little bit better, and I always love the story that leads into how one decides they're going to get into the business, and what made you so crazy to do so, because getting the business is not easy. There's a reason why only a small percentage of the community does so. Mm-hmm. You know, they reference 5%, right? Only will get into business. 1% of them will only really do the things that are extreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What I loved about what you said before was, there's about the time to jump. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of business owners, that they're faced with every day, right? It's when do you do something? How do you know when the right time is? You don't. You know, you just got
to. You have to do it. And you got to
know.
That leap.
Yeah, you got to know your business. You got to know what you're doing. You got to know your customer. You got to know everything there is to know. And then there's the part that you don't know, and that's the area most people like Matt, who are very. I don't know about picking on you, Matt, but
that's okay.
But I respect it. I respect it because we need balance. Mm-hmm. Jen and I, very similar. Right? Mm-hmm. Like in business, it's go, go, go. And I think this is right. I'm going to do this. If we don't have a counterpart, like my wife is my counterpart. If I don't have her to put me in check and ask me the questions that make me think about things, mm-hmm. I might have stepped in the wrong direction in different times. And so that's why it's a good sort of, as they would refer to, yin and yang, right?
It works. It's a very good balance.
Yeah. And So, by the way, before we get into the history of this, how is it working together, right? Because my wife always says to me that there's not a chance that we could work together.
Only certain people could, honestly.
Yeah.
It's home and work and it's constant, it's like, that's could be trying.
I mean, it's the greatest thing ever.
I love that. Guys, be fair to our listeners. There's no video. So I want to paint a picture. Matt's face was completely flat. It's the greatest ever. I love it. Right? That was fantastic.
I think it takes, I will say it works mostly because of Matt. This man has more patience than anybody in the world combined. I've never met somebody with so much patience, which is great because you need that. So that's why I think it works. That's solely the only reason I think it works. But it does take certain people to work together. And I think we do work well, again, because of the patience. But I completely trust him. Like, he can see the vision that I set forward. And he, in some instances, knows when he needs to either expand on that or when he doesn't, or what's good or what's not. And I don't know, I feel like we have the ability to talk about it, or we kind of make everything funny. Like, I don't think we're ever serious. Because at the end of the day, like, we just have each other, and then, I don't know, it's fine. That's the only reason why I can think of. Why do you think it works? Unless you're lying this whole time to me. Like, if you want to go, go.
It's definitely, like, a good balance. Like, I admit when I don't know something, or, like, I'm going to admit right now, like, computer side of things, I am horrible at, and that. And she's shaking her head, and like, she definitely helps me deal with that aspect of it. But face to face dealing with customers every day, like, I am really good with direct contact with customers.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, that's mostly stemming. I have a background in hospitality, so I'm thinking
we're gonna learn about that.
I'm thinking that's how it came about.
All right, well, let's have that be the segue then into learning about, you know, where you guys were before this, and again, what led you to deciding to do this. So first, I'll ask, are you guys both from the area your whole lives?
Yes. Yeah.
So you're from Pittston, Jen, and Matt, where are you from?
I grew up in Moosic.
Moosic, yeah. Oh, okay. Did you go to Pittston?
I did.
And where did you go to school, Matt?
Riverside.
Riverside. Yep. Okay. So let's start with you, Jen. What did, going back to high school, growing up, who were you in school? What did you do? Did you play sports?
I did it all. I did track and field. I was really big into the marching band and color guard and played softball. Loved sports, but I was also a very big nerd. I still am to this day. I love to learn. I love school. If I could be a lifelong student and business owner, I would be. Like, I just never want to stop. But I kind of get the best of both worlds, because you don't stop as a business owner learning things. But I was in the math club and yearbook and communications, and I loved all my science classes, and I just, it was a huge part of who I was. I knew I wanted to go to school. At the time, I had an idea I was going to be an FBI agent or like a work in homicide detectives or anything like that. I wanted, that was what I thought I wanted. And to this day, it still sounds pretty cool, but I never quite got there. I stopped really short. but I went to the University of Scranton. I got my bachelor's degree there. Again, very high in the sciences, criminal justice. I did a lot of forensic science, so I had chemistry, anatomy, and a lot of those classes. Still loved it.
Was that with the intention of doing what you just said?
Yeah, it was still my intention.
So you went to University of Scranton with the intention to get into the FBI or something? Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
After I finished that, I graduated in 2009, which was a really bad time economically, 2008, 2009. So jobs weren't a whole readily available.
Yeah,
FBI was
under.
Not an option that year, I'll tell you that much. So then I decided to continue my education, and I moved out to Chicago. I went to the Loyola University of Chicago, and I got my master's in criminal justice, still with the intent that that's where I was going to be. Once I was out there, I did have a lot of interviews, but nothing came to fruition. So if we're still talking about me, I came home, I felt defeated. Like, the jobs I could get, you know, weren't really what I envisioned for myself. They were what I was able to get with my degree at the time to pay the bills, but I wasn't happy. I was getting upset, and, you know, depending on how far you want to get into this, like, you know, you're told at 18, you have to come up with that decision of what you want to be for the rest of your life. College was just pushed on you. And like I said, I thought I knew, and it still interests me to this day. It still interests me. But it just wasn't meant to be. And I felt the longer I was out of school, I felt like I was a failure, all these types of things running through your head as you get older, right? You're like, why aren't where I thought it, why am I not where I wanted to be, where I thought I would be? And, I decided to get out of that mindset, came home. We were dating at the time because we met in the middle of that. And I was like, I just joined the Army today, so bye. I'll see you. I'm leaving next month. And he's like, what? So I just took a different path. And
you guys just met?
No, we met before that. But
2009?
We started dating, yeah. At this point, I finished my master's, and by the time I joined the Army, it was already 2013. But like I said, I was struggling from when I finished my master's in 2011, still couldn't find jobs. 2012, 2013, I just had enough.
Like, was the thought going into the military would potentially help the trajectory?
It was part of that, but it was also always a goal of mine as well. I've had a lot of goals since I was a little girl. Being an FBI was one of them. I think I knew at 7 years old, I told my family that's what it's going to be. Being in the military and traveling abroad, and I did all three of those things. Like, I had a very extensive bucket list at seven. But anyway.
At seven.
I really did. I'm not making that up. Mom, if you're listening, you could support that.
No, I mean, that's interesting.
I was very driven.
Yeah, to be, I mean, I could tell you there's probably 20 things that I thought about being when I was that age. Like, mm-hmm. none of which I even came close to thinking about doing, but it was mm-hmm. a lot of it was motivated. And I'm curious on what motivated you. Cause for me, it would have just been motivated by like what I saw in the movies.
I was just gonna say, it's things that you see that other people are doing.
That's how it started. If I'm being honest, the movie that inspired
me. Yeah, no, that's fair. Because I think.
Was Face Off with John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
Interesting. That made you want to be a.
I don't think I've ever told anybody that.
That's what this podcast is about. That's great. I mean, I love that you shared that. I as a kid, I wanted to be an Air Force pilot. Like, but not just an Air Force pilot. I wanted to be an air doctor. Like, that's what I dreamt of being. Yeah. I thought, man, I mean, something between the
PJs. That's what they call like their on scene,
like the medevac and things like that.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. Exactly. Yep. Okay. Yeah. I thought like, you know, you arrive on scene mm-hmm. and then you're doing whatever in a war zone. Like there was just, that's what I thought when I was a little kid. I was like, this is what I want to do. And none of what I planned for in my future went in that direction. Mm-hmm. But I could tell you, I still remember vividly wanting to do it. But it was driven by movies like Iron Eagle and Top Gun.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, there's a number of things that I was like, oh, man, this is great. So, yeah, it's funny. And I appreciate that something like that, Face mm-hmm. Off, is what motivated you.
I know.
You know, because it's either that or you grow up in – like a military-based family or
right,
like, you know, you're like, what did your parents do?
My mom, she works a couple different jobs for what I can remember when I was little, but she worked at this sounds awful. I think insurance.
Okay.
So no, nothing in any of the realms that I wanted to do. And as far as I knew when I was little, we didn't have anybody in our family that went into the military. And my inspiration for the military, which is also not a good story, I don't think, but as a little kid, I was obsessed with the American flag. I love the way it looked. I love the way the wind made it move. And for whatever reason, it always like captivated me. Very early on, I remember learning about Francis Scott Key in my music classes and just hearing, I could get teary-eyed just thinking about it, but just hearing the stories of patriotism behind it, and that like always like really resonated with me. And then obviously when September 11th happened, I was in ninth grade, and that is really what just solidified that dream for me. But I was already on a certain course for the FBI, and I was like, well, like I have to choose, right? So I chose the FBI first, but once everything started not to work out, I would make it so far in the interviews and I wasn't getting the jobs or anything like that. I was like, okay, maybe this is for a reason, right? Maybe, you know, joining the military at this point would be better for me. It's still, you know, it wouldn't be a failure for me. It's still something I always aspired to be. And maybe this is what I was meant to do all along.
And how old were you at this time?
26.
Wow.
So you can do anything at any age.
And are you headed to boot camp at this point?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I obviously, you know, had some requirements now. It wasn't like we were together. He had a job that he loved at the time. So moving and uprooting his life was not an option for me. And I wanted something to be around my sister who was going to be getting married soon and stuff like that. So I went and met with a Army National Guard recruiter. I was one of his most older candidates because nobody usually strolls in at 26 years old asking to join. I knew what I wanted. I was already educated, so I didn't need their money. I wanted to be boots on the ground, learning a task that I would never get the opportunity to learn in the civilian world. Went in, signed my papers, came home and told them what I did. And
what did you go in as?
In E4.
And
that's a specialist position.
And what do they call it, your MO?
Oh, my MOS was a 14 Golf. For anybody who's listening who knows what that is, it was an Air Defense Battles Management Systems Operator. Huge title. But basically, my job was to work on radar systems, you know, kind of missile tracking, working on different components and shelters with equipment to, like, support radars for, like, Patriot missiles and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you go on any tours?
No, I did not. I used to be really upset about that. But now at this age, I realize that I'm pretty blessed for that. I had really other great opportunities within my unit to serve the area. So,
is that where you were, Army National Guard?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure, because anytime any of the local stuff takes place, right? Mm-hmm. They call the National Guard in. So mm-hmm. did you have to pull guard or local assistance?
Yeah, there was a couple things that they had.
Floods and all that
stuff. Yeah, same thing like you talked about. We were on a FEMA designated unit. Mm-hmm. So they called a lot of, like, it's hard to describe, HERF missions, where we would do trainings for the papal visits or
inaugurations and things like
stuff
that.
Like that.
Big, like, high-end events.
Yeah, so even if you weren't attending them, you were training, prepping, search and rescue, riot, like, all that stuff. So
what was, do you have, like, your biggest takeaway memory from your time?
Not an instance, but the people. I met some of the greatest people either in my unit or in basic or in AIT that I'll absolutely never forget.
A camaraderie, right?
Yeah, it's different. You never forget them. Time, years can pass, and they've been, I think it becomes so important is because they've been with you in a situation that's probably like the suckiest situation you've had to be in. Like, whether you're pulling some type of work detail that was just absolutely awful, but you got to do it with somebody that you just absolutely loved or made you laugh. And it builds up that camaraderie quicker. One of my vivid memories, because I joined so old, my nickname in boot camp was Grandma.
That's funny.
They screamed at me. They're like, get the fuck up, Grandma. And I'm like, oh, stop. I'm not even that old. My goodness. But no, it was still pretty brutal.
Where did you go for boot camp?
Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Okay. And then AIT?
Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Oh, you stayed there.
I did. I wasn't lucky enough to get to travel somewhere else. I had to stay in that hellhole.
You moved about a mile down the road.
I know. It was awful.
Now, when you went, Matt, you stayed back here?
I did, yes.
Okay. And at this point, you're still dating at that point, I guess?
As far as I know.
So, how long had you been dating before?
So, probably, about 4 years.
Okay. You've been dating 4 years before you go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez. So, this is not like a new relationship and then I'm out. It's 4 years.
No, that was Chicago. We were together 2 weeks. I was like, bye. I'm moving.
Bye.
you're coming or no? I was like, all right, I'll go.
How did you, I need to know, how did you guys meet?
So, a little bit about my background. So I was in the restaurant industry for 23 years. Mm-hmm. We actually met at one of the restaurants we were working at. So I was in the back, one of the chefs, and she was one of the servers.
Oh, you're a chef?
That's my my pastime, yes.
Now he cooks candles.
Well, that's cool.
I still follow recipes, but on a different kind of thing here.
So you met her at the restaurant?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how did this come about now?
Well, she tried, how do I want to say this? She always wanted to date me, right?
I knew I loved him.
Oh, you knew him beforehand?
No. But I would always refuse, saying I didn't want to get involved with the coworker and things like that.
I think people are going to be confused. The moment I am one of those people, the moment I met him, I knew I was going to marry him. I loved him instantly. And I told him that day, literally my first day on the job, because he was already a chef there. And he must have thought I was crazy.
Wait, were you a server?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we were at the
same
restaurant.
I don't know why. Maybe I didn't hear that. I thought she was a customer. No. And she's a chef. And she's like, I'm marrying that dude. Like, I was like, whew. She gets what she wants.
I do.
Olivia Gray's out there to see you.
Table one.
Olivia Gray's a table one chef.
No, but eventually he gave in. I think it took just, I don't know, it was 9 months maybe of me just keeping asking.
Yeah.
She was persistent.
That's good. I mean, that's cool. So. Well, I mean, hey, when you see something you want, like, you know, you must have had everything that she was looking for. So that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about how you ended up as a chef. You went to school at Riverside, you know. Tell us a little bit about you as in high school, like play sports, what kind of activities
I did. So I did. I played baseball. I played football. I actually ended up breaking my back during a football game.
Oh, geez.
So that kind of took a backseat to other things. I had plans originally to join the military as well. This was well before we didn't even know each other. But that happened. I was in talks with the recruiter and things like that. And then when medical records came up, they don't lie.
Yeah.
And they saw that the back injury and they said, we're sorry.
What were you, what branch?
Army.
Oh, okay.
His dad is a 30-year veteran.
So I grew up in a military family. Nice. So when this whole thing happened, when she decided to join, I didn't react to it like, oh, my God, why are you doing this? Cause I grew up in a military family.
Yeah.
My father, like she was said, 29 years.
Wow.
In the Army. So you can imagine the upbringing that we had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't get away with much growing up.
Did you, was your dad full active duty?
So He did a lot of the restructuring down in like Honduras and everything like that.
Wow.
Back in the 70s, 60s, late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. He was down there, did a lot of the rebuilding schools and roads and the infrastructure and things like that.
Did you move around with him at all?
We did not, no.
Oh, okay. So he just went on his tours.
Yeah.
And then came home.
Yep.
Okay.
And then we were all still here, and right where he left us.
oh, hey, Dad.
But yeah. So then after high school, so I ended up going to I would cook from a young age. My mother always told the stories. Like I'd be 2-3 years old, pulling a chair over to the stove, getting up there, and like making eggs for the family and things like that.
What?
But then after high school, I ended up going to Keystone College up in La Plume, so local. Got an Associate of Applied Science, Culinary Arts up there.
Is that what you set out to do? Was you kind of had a vision? You're like, I'm going to be a chef.
Yes.
Yep. Nice. Okay.
So I stuck with it. I graduated Keystone in 2006 and then went right into full time into the restaurant industry. I started in the restaurants
That's brutal.
15 years old when I first started.
Like, was it everything you thought it was going to be?
Oh, and worse.
And worse. Right, right.
100%.
Yeah. I have tremendous admiration for the people who work in that industry. You live and breathe it. I don't, and there's no other way. I mean, I have so many friends that are chefs, and
definitely married to the industry.
Yeah, once you're in it. It's nice when you can get yourself in a position where ownership supports you
right.
in understanding the importance of work-life balance, mm-hmm. because then it's a matter of staffing appropriately.
Yeah.
But most of those restaurants,
it takes a while to get to that point.
Right.
And
right.
that's what a lot of people don't understand.
And it all falls onto the executive chef's head.
Right.
And then next thing you know, it's they're going in at 6 o'clock in the morning, not leaving until 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And this is just on rotation.
Right.
And it's like, what do these people do other than work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. And I mean, but also, you know, the what it takes to do that job in regards to the attention to detail. You know, cleanliness, like mm-hmm. everything, all the stuff that goes into caring about the product. I mean, you just got to be a certain kind of person.
Right. And I tell that to everybody. I was like, it's definitely a special breed of person that does the restaurant industry in general. You have to be somewhat not right in the head to do it, but in a good way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, now I don't want to shine a negative light on anything, but it's that position in particular in all the studies shows that it's one of the most highest depression jobs.
Yeah.
Meaning these are people who, and as a result, unfortunately, they end up on drugs, they end up alcoholism.
Yeah.
Like there's just a tremendous amount of stress-induced depression that's around that particular job. And it's unfortunate. There's no shortage of the need for good chefs, that's
right.
for sure. But man, it's so incredibly difficult. Like I know I love to cook. I absolutely love cooking. But if you said, do you want to own a restaurant? Hell no.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll own it, but I would like a chef to.
Out, right?
Oh my God. To do that job, it's like. Like you said, you gotta have like a few bolts loose or something. Like, that's nuts. So, I mean, that's cool though. That did you have any experience working as a kid? Did you get a job in a restaurant early?
I did. So, I was saying, I was 15 years old when I first started. So, my first job ever was I was up at Cinemark on Montage Mountain.
Oh,
so we'd always get the opportunity to go there in like the little kitchens and kind of help. Get orders out and things like that. I mean, it wasn't much at the time,
sure.
like sandwiches and things like that. But hey, it was the beginnings.
Yeah, it's where you learn.
And once I finally got into, after that, let me start again. Sorry. After that, I got in with Darden Restaurants.
Okay.
Worked my way up. I was with Darden for just about 11 years. Became a corporate trainer with them. So I would travel all over the U.S. and open up different restaurants with them. So I awesome regards in that aspect that I got to see a lot of the United States doing that.
I got to ask this question, though, because I've had this discussion with some of the friends that are chefs, like I mentioned, and they also worked in those major chains.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is a sort of commonality amongst them is that while you're working in that environment, and if you're fueled by creativity and by the idea that you love to, you know, sort of experiment and do all these things as a creator, that's all diminished in that environment. And mm-hmm. a lot of people, like a lot of what you would refer to as the trained people, the people who dedicated their life, not a line cook or something who's just there
right,
to work,
right.
right? But a chef. Somebody who's working in that environment finds that very difficult to stay in that environment because they're so restricted in their creativity because mm-hmm. everything is
set. It's to the book.
Yeah.
You have to follow procedures spot on.
Which that's good in any environment.
It's awesome that they
right?
have that kind of like background and support system. But at the same time, like you said, you kind of.
There's no creative.
You can be so much more creative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to unload sauce out of a bag that's mm-hmm. pre-made. Oh, that's like damn it. You know what I mean? Like, you want to make it. You want to appreciate, even if it's ever so slightly different, like, because you just had a little bit more salt in it this time or something like that, you can appreciate it because it feels authentic.
Right.
You know, and I think there's something bland about consistency in that sense. Mm-hmm. I think that when a chef is good, you know that the product is good, and I can that's where I think the folks that I've chatted with, you know, they're just fulfilled in their job because they create.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's something. So is that inevitably where you ended up then, was working with the chains?
So that's where I was with them for, I'd say, probably 11 and a half, 12 years or so. And then my next job, so no, after that is when I actually became an executive chef.
Oh.
I worked for a minor league baseball team, actually. I was there from 2013 through 2020.
Oh, great.
And I had my own staff of approximately 10 that I directly oversaw, and about 150 that I oversaw, like, secondary.
What, I have to ask, what type of fare are you serving at a place like that?
So I was in charge of we did all of the catering for, like, the suite level.
Oh, so you're making good stuff.
Yeah.
Were you in charge of the menu?
I was.
Ooh, that's exciting.
It was, yeah.
What's, do you have a self-proclaimed dish?
Everybody asks me this all the time.
Well, sure.
And I...
No, your smokehouse.
Oh, yeah. I did get really good doing like smoked meats, like briskets and pulled pork and chicken and things
so
like that.
So if I said, Matt, I want you to make the thing that you make the best for me tomorrow. I it's the one thing that's going to absolutely blow my socks off. Like, what's that dish?
I could definitely make you a good barbecue.
Okay.
And his mac and cheese. He's known for his mac. I know that seems like a simple recipe, but
No.
There's a lot of ways to mess it up. Yeah.
I'll compete with people with my mac and cheese, but if you care about it, you make it with a nice
bechamel. You make it with love.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You start with a nice bechamel. You build it from there. Yes,
he knows.
Oh, I've... Samantha just stepped out, but Samantha is my daughter, and if you ask Samantha about my mac and cheese, oh, she'll tell you.
You don't mess around with that.
I don't mess around with it. Yeah, it depends on, you know, you introduce a little truffle, you introduce a little, oh, man, this
100%.
Cooper cheese will take you to the end of the world. But, I mean, there's so many different things you can do with mac and cheese. Lobster mac and cheese is one of my favorite things in the world.
It's definitely
seafood mac.
Good one, yeah.
He does seafood mac.
Oh, love it. I'm not eating any of that pasta anymore or anything like that, so I really miss it. But, yep. But well, that's cool. So then, this all comes together. You're doing was that where you then left so that you can do the candle business?
I kind of left, to use that term loosely. So in 2020, I was actually part of the group. Obviously, COVID hit the restaurant industry very hard.
Yeah,
I actually lost my job. I was furloughed once. Actually, twice, got called back for a couple months and then let go again. And then after that second time is when I was just like, no more. I was like, we did the candle industry thing on the side, like we were saying. We were traveling around doing all these craft shows and things like that. I would help her in the rare chance that I had time off.
Sure.
And like a weekend or a night or anything like that, I would help her. But after the second time I was let go, I was just like,
sick of this.
Yeah. I was like, no more. I was like, if you want to do this, like, go all in. I was like, I'm here.
Yeah, you take control of your own future at that point.
It was definitely a complete 180 from what
I
did.
Scary, I'm sure, again, but, right?
Yeah. At the same time, I was looking for a change.
And at this point, had the business sort of started to afford for you to be able to comfortably do that?
Yes. And there
that's great.
A lot of discussions about me leaving. Some of them got a little heated. They did, but yeah.
Not for me, I would like to clarify from his employment.
Oh, right,
everybody's
right.
Looking at me like, what?
Yeah,
did
no,
say
no.
To
the
him?
Listeners are like, oh,
not me.
But no, I made that.
Olivia Gray got a little spicy.
That episode two.
Chapter two. But, Olivia Gray gets spicy.
I did that. I made that leap and glad I did.
That's awesome. I think that's a very scary time, but if your business was sustainable to the point where you can make that move, mm-hmm. and you were already headed in the right direction and blessed, and that only gave you the ability to scale and do more anyway.
Right.
So that's fantastic. What does the future of this business look like?
We have six nieces, maybe potentially having our seventh one or a nephew. We don't know. But they live in different areas. And I think the goal would be to have a store in every area that they are. So we could see them more often and just be a part of their lives, like have maybe one out in the Michigan area so we could be with two of them, and one down in Allentown, Bethlehem.
Lehigh Valley, yeah.
One down in just other places that we'd want to get to or visit, like South Carolina, have a place there. I think that's our goal, is to bring this to other people, still love what we do, never stop creating different scents, traveling, and just bringing that to people.
I mean, the product is great. You guys are awesome. I think you can tell that you're very passionate about what you do. And I love your reasoning for things. It's not motivated, like, you don't have a money-chasing type of behavior. Mm-hmm. It's all about the fulfillment and what you're doing and being able to work with people mm-hmm. and yeah. see the pleasure. I could clearly pick up on that, which is really nice, because that's refreshing. Because when you have a conversation with people who are just, you know, I opened up a business because I think this is the next good investment. This is the thing that I'm going to yeah. find additional passive income or wealth from. Mm-hmm. I understand the concept. But
you need a why after, right?
You really do.
When you're in those times that are like harder, every business will go through good months, bad months, and it's just that ebb and flow, right? If you don't have a solid why, and if money's your only why, I don't think you'll make it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think we've all seen it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's not hard to tell when a business goes under, some people just unfortunately are stricken with the unfortunate reality of the economy, or their product becomes irrelevant or something. You know, that's again another reason why so small of a percentage of people really do go out and get into business, because you know, it's not a field of dreams, right? You don't just build it and they will come. That doesn't happen, right? Well, I mean, I'm glad it's not the case, because if it was the case, then everybody would do it, and
right.
competition would be outrageous, right? So I like the idea that you can build a business today, and if you do it in an authentic form, if you care about the work that you do and the product that you put out, and you're genuine about it, and then as you grow, the people that you bring in accept your culture and reflect it perfectly. I think that's all a part of what makes growing a business more of the game that you appreciate, and the money just becomes a byproduct mm-hmm. of doing what you love to do. And I find that the people who are doing what they love to do are going to be more successful from a finance standpoint. And let's cut that right down to the science of it, mm-hmm. right? If you love what you do, then working those extra hours and working hard at those extra hours, it's not a struggle because you're still doing what you love to do. So in anything, the more time you put in it, the more you end up perfecting it, the more you can improve, the more you can grow, the more you learn. If it's just something that you're trying to make an investment into, then time becomes money and you are too concerned about how much time am I spending on this and is this profitable?
Yeah.
Then you're not thinking about the long-term game. So I think it's interesting that when you find businesses like either my business or your business, mm-hmm. it's it's very similar. It's the you love doing what you do. You love serving your customers. You know, it makes you feel good to see people come in and enjoy the experience. Or, you know, when you watch people, I'm sure I can imagine that you kind of standing around and watching somebody who's, you know, kind of touring around and smelling all the smells
and their face lights up.
Yeah. Like, I found the one I love, you know. It's like I talk to, you know, friends of mine, again, going back to the chef concept, that will peek out of the kitchen or, you know, kind of look from behind the wall and watch when somebody goes to try their food.
Yeah.
And that's their little secret time because
it makes you feel good.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like you guys get to create this product and it's not some sort of templated thing where you're just, you know, you didn't just step into something that somebody else created. Like you're literally making this product, but you're also still flexible to continue to make new product, change things, mix things. Mm-hmm. Like you're like the mad scientist of candles. And like it's kind of cool because it's not always going to come out perfect, but who cares? It was the experience. Sometimes it's even more fun, right? Because who sits around and gets to play with candle and do this without having some sort of, you know, lab or something to work with behind the scenes, you know, like some of the bigger brand candle companies that are out there. Like, we'll never know the people who make them, right? But you guys are right there. I can go to Pittston. I can walk right in. I can meet the people who make the candles
I'll
that are on the shelf.
Teach you how to make them yourself.
Yeah,
too.
And then there it is. And we can learn how to make them, and we can have that experience. So, I think that's what I mean when I say you guys are awesome. And I think the business is a really cool concept. I wish you guys all the best of luck there. And it's neat to hear that you know, even listening to what you just said, I'm touched by that. You said, it's not about opening up other locations. It was literally the intent behind those locations were because you want to be closer to family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like who says that? Like I feel like your halo just got brighter. like that. I mean, no, but that's incredible. I mean, like that's a really neat thing and such a genuine thing to say. Like I hope your nieces hear this and realize what
they're all so little. They will. Yeah.
You know, someday you go back and you let them listen to this episode when they're a little bit older, and you say, "Hey, we talked about this. Look where we are today." And then
Could you imagine,
this is timeless, right? So so at some point they're going to be able to go back and listen, and they'll hear why you did it, and what a special thing. Like that's really cool, and I'm glad that in that way I could be a part of that because that's a really neat thing that you guys are planning for and a journey that just is so genuine, and I love it. So was there anything else that we didn't talk about or anything that you wanted to cover before we wrap up?
I was just gonna add on to that. When we were talking about what makes us happy and stuff, I just wanted to reiterate, it's not lost on us too that people have so many choices out there. I mean, especially with candles. So like, knowing that people trust in us and ours is the products that they bring into our home, like just sit back and think about that for a second. Out of all the products somebody could buy, they chose yours. And we literally get to be a little piece of somebody's sanctuary in their home. And
yeah, we're super grateful because of that as well.
Yeah, it kind of gets me out of bed every day. You know, I really appreciate that.
I mean... You've got to appreciate that if you're in this business.
Yeah.
I mean, to think about that journey of the candle, right? You know, I mean, and think about that too. It's like if you think about all those moments when a candle is somewhere, right? It could be a romantic moment. It could be a somber
birthday.
Moment, a memory moment, like a memorial. That's what I mean. Like there's so many things that a candle could represent, and you somehow have a way of being involved with all of that. So that's really cool.
Crazy to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be neat to do. You like, are you sticking with this type of product? Like, and the melts, like the candles in the jars like this and the melts, like, or are there any other kind of
different ones? Like we have room sprays in the same sense.
Oh, you have sprays.
Car diffusers. We make body lotions, body sprays.
Okay.
We have everything.
Yeah, good. No, I'm glad we said that because we didn't mention that. So I make sure that the listeners know that there's a whole plethora of things that they can come and experience and purchase. So, well, that's awesome. Like I said, is there anything else?
I think we hit pretty much just about everything.
Yeah, I mean, if our listeners don't know you by now, well, they weren't listening.
Yeah, well, come out with book two. For
Olivia Gray series.
I'm telling you, one day it might happen.
I think there's going to be a book to, at some
You'll
point.
You'll get a shout out in it.
I hope so.
It's funny that you mentioned that because this bucket list that we were talking about, how I had a few things on there. The only thing that I haven't accomplished yet, I wanted to write my own book. I don't know what that's going to be someday. What? Maybe you gave me an idea. Maybe not. I don't know. But before I leave this beautiful earth, I would like to write a book. So it's the last thing on my bucket list.
I mean, I think you need to write a book that's an entire, which would be like, I think it would be fantastic to write. Can you imagine if you were to write a book about, like, it would be an autobiography about a fake person?
What do they call that?
It would be like The Diary of Olivia Gray. Mm. And then, like, that would be like The Diary of Olivia Gray, The Candle Burns at Both Ends.
Okay.
You know, it's like,
I see this, where you're going here.
Yeah. And then you read it and you're like, man, what a life she's lived. And it's just, you end up finding out, like, and maybe it is fiction because
this is true.
but it's written in a fashion that's almost like she wrote her own biography. Mm-hmm. But it's, she wrote her own biography. She doesn't really exist. So that makes it really cool.
Okay.
I love it.
Give me some time. It'll be the first one I'll let read it.
I'll write your foreword. Or what's that?
Perfect.
Look at that. Yeah. I love us planning together.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Nice. Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I enjoyed this conversation, and I thought it was a great interview. And I think that our listeners are really going to appreciate what you guys have done and where you're going with your business. And I certainly will plan. I think it'd be fun for our team to come and make some candles.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like a fun thing to do. And
say you're welcome anytime.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to take you up on that and come over. Before we head out, I know we talked about we're going to do a giveaway to help promote the episode, mm-hmm. right? And so for any new listeners that are just tuning in, the way this works is you have to like, share, and comment on the Getting to Know the 570s post. So when we put this episode out, you have to like, share, and comment a keyword from today's episode. And we already determined what that keyword was way earlier on in the episode, which is Tobocco. And so it would be TOBBOCCO.
Something
right?
like that. Yeah, we could come up with
close,
a spelling.
Close enough.
But it was definitely wrong. It was Tobocco.
Tobocco. Sure. We're just going to put TOBOCO.
Perfect.
Right? Beautiful. That's it. The keyword is TOBOCO.
You got it.
Right? Tobocco. And if you don't know what that means you didn't listen to this whole episode, and shame on you. Give these folks some respect and go back and listen to the whole episode. We make mistakes. We're human. Yeah. And that's the preface to that. Tobocco means we make mistakes. Well, what we're going to do is the giveaway is a candle and car diffuser pack. And this has ideally around like a $45 value. So wonderful giveaway. And again, what you have to do, like, share, comment the keyword Tobocco, T-O-B-O-C-O. And we'll do a random select. And typically about like 1 or 2 weeks, 2 weeks or so after the episode goes out. That way it gives enough people to catch on and get into the entries. And then we'll do the random drawing. You will have to go see Jen and Matt, Olivia Gray. You will have to go see them at their location in Pittston. We do not handle the giveaways, so we'll just let you know that you were chosen, and then you get to connect with them, and it's a good reason for you to go visit their store anyway. If there's nothing else, let's just wrap up with telling everybody one more time. I know we briefly touched on some stuff before, but tell everybody where they can find you. That's if you give them your phone number, address, web, social, all that good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, our storefront is located right on Kennedy Boulevard in Pittston. If you're familiar with that area, it was across from it's in the waterfront building, which is across from Quinn's Market. Other ways to get in touch with us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, we're at Designs by Olivia Gray. Designs is plural, Gray is G-R-E-Y. And then our website is www.designsbyoliviagray.com.
That sounded recited, so that was really nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you perfect. Hiring?
It happens a lot.
Voiceover work, that's great.
I hear that's the next big thing.
Yeah, it's a big hit. I got people emailing me every day for it.
Thank you.
Well, guys, lots of fun. I love this. Mm-hmm. And again, wish you all the best of luck. And I'll look forward to coming over and seeing your place, and we'll bring the team over. So I'll be excited about that. And if you ever have anything that you're doing, please feel free. Sometimes we don't catch it. We try to promote things for our guests. So, but if you have any events that you're having, feel free to shoot us a message and say, hey, would you mind posting this? Because we'll put it up for you, and that way at least our audience will see it as well.
Great.
We're happy to help out as much as possible. In the meanwhile, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Do whatever you want to do. Most importantly, just keep tuning in, because that's why we keep doing this. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening and supporting the 570.
If you like this episode,
please leave a review and make sure to check out all the past episodes.
If you or someone you know is interested in being a guest,
message us on Facebook or email podcast@conversionworks.com.